This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Three Z does it, gents. Two wins in three games. The latter of those a three-goal haul at Stevenage on Saturday, meaning the last three away wins for the O's have brought three goals or more for Ross Embleton's men. This is the Leighton Orient Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from the Lowdown Podcast. Journo Jules Fern, hello.
Evening.
Brendan, the knowledge pitcher, hello.
All right.
And delighted to say we are joined by ex-O's player himself. Glenn Wilkie is in the house. Hello, Glenn.
Good evening.
Great to have you boys here. It is another Monday evening here on Love Sport. If you want to join the debate, very easy to do so. 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Julian, since the last time we spoke, it's been one defeat but one big win.
Well, a change in form, eh? So I think for me it was definitely coming. I think you could see that at Crewe away and at Newport at home again, a good performance. And I think I'm not just pleased for Ross, because I think we could talk about Ross all day long. I'm pleased for the players. You know, the players were at times looking down the sort of the old barrel of a gun, thinking, when are we going to get some form in place? And you know, it just pleases me a lot that we're scoring. Yeah, we're defending well. Okay, with a couple of slip-ups at Crewe, literally
pardon
a couple.
Pardon the pun.
Yeah, pardon the pun. But I'm really pleased with the players, because I think now this is the time to go on and show the class that we had last year and sort of push on for the rest of the season and really look forward to the summer and the season beyond for next year.
Nice. We'll quickly usher Crewe out of the room. I don't think we need to dwell on it too much, do we? But we'll talk about the slip, because I actually think that it's turned out to be maybe, and this might be a bit crass, a bit of a convenient slip, because what it's done is allow Ross to bring in Mr. Vigouroux, of course. He's come in, clean sheet on Saturday.
Yeah, he looked really calm. His distribution was solid on a difficult pitch with difficult conditions and played really well. Going back to Crewe, I think I don't think we merited losing that game. It was a decent performance against a very good side. We dominated possession. Connor Wilkinson missed a couple of chances. If they go in, he had a goal ruled out, which was debatable. I think a draw would have been a fair result in that one, and it gave us a springboard to move on to Saturday, where we produced a really good performance.
It was a cracker of a performance, wasn't it, Glenn?
Yeah, it was a good game, really good game. And couple of points, what Julian said about the confidence in the players and pushing on. I think the confidence, I got the three or four games from December, back end of December to Saturday just gone, and I could see it, and I could see them growing. But the big thing which has grown their confidence, other than the getting the points, was the new signings that have come in, because they've come in key areas, and you can see the players around them responding to these so-called, they are better players as well, because if you look at them and the way they are on the pitch, they're talking to the players next to them and they're helping them along, and their confidence is growing so much. Saturday was superb, really enjoyed it.
Cisse, really, I think he's been exceptional in my opinion. He was that sort of midfielder we've missed for a while, even last season, you know, even under Justin, where I think we never had that type of player. One thing I like about him, forget what he can do on the pitch regards to his own talent, but as you're saying, you see him talking all the time, encouragement, pulling people together. He's acting like the captain, he's not the captain, and that's what you need. You need more captains on the pitch, especially when your sort of luck's a little bit down, you need to go forward. And you look at the other players we brought in as well. I know Sam's a great goalkeeper, and Glenn can comment on that from a playing perspective. Vigouroux is definitely a couple of steps above, and we had an interview before where if he keeps his nose clean and stops being a bit of a silly boy now and then, he could be a championship player. So for me, that's signing, a great signing. And I think no ill for Dean, and Dean was great for us last year. We could see very early doors, he was struggling in League Two. And I think we've now got the foundation to push on and go forward.
I've just going back to Vigouroux, just looking at him in the warm-up, I went down and stood pitch side watching the players in the warm-up, and I was looking at him, and he was almost messing around. He was dropping the ball, and I'm thinking, what's going on here? But he was actually acting the goat. He was trying to catch the ball at funny angles, and but that's his character from what I'm led to believe. But then when he got into the game, you could see his class. He's literally calmed everyone down, like you just said. He's handling nothing. He didn't spill anything. He caught it. He got up. His kicking was good, and he had the wind and the sun in his face. All right, some of his kicks sort of got to the halfway line and blew back near the box because it was so strong. But he just breeds confidence. And as a defender, you know you've got someone like that behind you. It really helps you out as well.
I was about to say, as a defender, yeah. That's quite important, I presume.
Well, yeah, because all you have to do is say, right, okay, if you want to shoot from 25 yards, you do that because I'm comfortable. He's going to save the ball. And I know it sounds silly, like you don't want people to shoot, but I'm going to defend quite high up. If you get a shot in, shoot from distance, I'm really confident with the guy behind me.
I like what you say about Vigouroux as well in the warm-up, because it's a dying breed, that, really, isn't it? A player who has a bit of fun. You know, yeah. We kind of are so scared. And it reminds me, I remember as a kid watching Les Seeley warming up, of course, an ex-Orient goalkeeper, wasn't he, for a bit? And he used to have a laugh and a joke with the fans, but as soon as that whistle went, he was on his game.
Yeah, yeah. Going on to the other players in the warm-up, they were right, literally 5 yards away from me when I was doing their warm-up. And I was looking at them, and I'm looking at their faces, because don't really get to see him that close up, and all he sat up in the press box or wherever. And I was looking at him, and you could,
and you're saying, I get press tickets, I sat in the box, look at him, hey.
No, it's only because they're free. It's only because they're free, and that's where they're getting it. But looking at how sort of zoned in they were on the game, and George Marsh was the one what really struck me. He was so professional in his warm up. He didn't. Horses for courses, people warm up in different ways, but he was so sort of head strong, looking, didn't mess around, got his warm up done, and they were absolutely brilliant in the warm up. And I had a bet, and I knew straight away, I thought they're going to win this game. And I said in the press box, 2 or 3 clear goals.
Wow, just had that hunch. Sometimes you can feel it in your bones when you're watching.
Yeah, I spoke to Ross as the warm up's going on. I said, you're confident? And he said, very. So that tells you a lot before the game, yeah.
Going back to George Marsh, I remember when he signed for us, and we was at Mansfield away, and I was sitting in the stand. It was a Tuesday night, it was very cold, and we were sort of losing at half time. But you looking at George on the line, he was warming up, and you could tell he's a good pro. I know he's a young lad, but he's been brought up the right way, and I think that is so important to his game. As you say, every player's different, but I've seen him every time he warms up really, really well. And takes into the game. I give the lad his due. You know, he's played all over that pitch over the last few games, and he's been a consistency there in playing that sort of right back. And I think he's a phenomenal talent, and I'm really pleased we got him to the end of the season. I think his contract's up at Spurs at the end of the year, and I'd love to see the O's go in for him. You know, I think he's the sort of talent we should be sort of keeping hold of, although he's not one of our own, but that sort of level to push us on over the next season or so.
And speaking of talents that we need to keep hold of, Ruta Tiriu, we can't really forget him. He had a fantastic game on Saturday. He looks a real talent. He's averaging a goal every 96 minutes in the EFL at the minute, which is some strike rate if he can keep that going. The only worry is, I believe he's out of contract as well at the end of the summer.
There's quite a few out of contracts, isn't there? And I looking at the lineup afterwards on Saturday evening, a few people were tweeting me and bits and pieces, and not the normal nonsense because it was a 3-0 win. But the big ones for me was getting Cisse. Can we get him? Because he's a Rolls Royce in there. He goes unnoticed a lot of the time with what he does, but he didn't give the ball away until the 93rd minute when it got stuck under his feet and three of them got around him and nicked the ball off him. Didn't give the ball away, keeps it nice and simple, breaks down play, screens the back four. Really, really impressive. And I think that guy, I know they've spoken about, let's sign players who can play at League One. He can play League One easily. Well, he has, hasn't he? But him, and then you look at, I thought Marvin was superb. That was the best game I've seen him have in the last two seasons. Didn't put a foot wrong. Loved when they're winning 2-0, put a clearance, kicks it out of the ground. Kick it over the stand, have a breather, get everyone organised, do the horrible things, you know? Because you're coming up against a lot of honey monsters in that league. They're big boys, a lot of them. And it's a battle a lot of the time. But that was the most professional performance I've seen him put in this season and last, and the team.
to positive signs, chaps, essentially.
A bit different from a few weeks ago, isn't it?
It is extremely different from a few weeks ago. This is the Leighton Orient fan show here on A Love Sport. We've got Glenn Wilkie in the house. As I said, we're going to be asking him plenty of questions about his time as a player at the club, what he thinks of the current crop. We're going to be getting him to answer some of your questions on WhatsApp too.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It's the Leighton Orient fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Biddle, with the boys from the Lowdown podcast. Julian Fern, Brendan Pitcher, and ex Leighton Orient defender Glenn Wilkie is in the house. We've got plenty of questions for you, Glenn. We're going to delve deep into your Leighton Orient career, what you think of the current crop. We've also got some questions on WhatsApp as well. Just a very quick one before we move on. Guilf has WhatsApped in and he wants to know how much you won on your bet, mate, in the Stevenage game.
Oh, it was an accumulator, but they were the only away team I stuck on there. I got odds of 35-1, so...
So nice, a pretty
penny. Are you saying
that
because the wives were listening, or are you saying that because the tax man's listening, one of the two?
No, well, you don't get taxed on bets, do you? No, it was three figures.
Good lad. Good lad.
Lovely. Thank you for your honesty. Plenty of pound notes, eh? Danny Macklin will be listening in there.
Sustainability, yes. Yeah.
Julian, please, you've got plenty of questions.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions, and thanks to the guys who have DM'd us during the day. The first one is, being a fairly young player and in a mature side, who did you look up to whilst you was the O's?
Once I got in the first team?
Yeah.
Well, I was lucky enough and unfortunate enough to get in the first team at 17. Made my debut away at Crewe, New Year's Eve in the snow. Had to mark Danny Murphy before he went off to Liverpool. So when you get in that team, obviously you know what your job is and you've done all your prep. But the senior players, you look up to all of them because a lot of them have had long careers. But the ones who I really looked up to were the ones who took me aside and helped me out. And I remember I came on at Crewe, I think there was about 20 minutes to go. Murphy got the ball and he hit it past me. I went on at right wing back and I got back and I thought, I'm going to get the ball here. Completely missed the ball and took him out. Today, it would have been borderline red card. He went into the side of the sort of stand, I think. But the referee came marching over and Glenn Cockerell came running over straight away and said to the ref, it's his first ever game. That is his first involvement in professional football. Give him a break. And he put the card back in his pocket because I was going to get a yellow. So, and Glenn helped me enormously because of his career plan at the top level with Southampton. He was brilliant. Others, Danny Carter in training, he was great. Although he did scare me one day when we played Brentford at home. I was playing right back and I really didn't need to hear. He came up to me and said, their left winger, Paul Stevenson. He said, he's really tricky. Be careful of him. He does this, does that. And I'm all set for the game. And now he's put loads of fears in my mind. That was one thing. I always remember that. I thought, cheers, I didn't need to hear that. Didn't need to hear that. But all the senior pros were really good. Really, really good.
So that's really nice to hear. And I think it's one thing we talked about on the show a few months ago where I think we're on the pitch, we're probably missing Joby. Because I think he did a great job last year, especially with Josh Coroma. I think he really helped Josh prove Josh's game on the pitch, off the pitch. And I think Josh has someone to look up to, a man who played in a similar role, very flamboyant, etc., etc. So that's really nice to hear. And the other couple of questions I've got here is, why Orient? You know, I know your connection to the East End, and I know your career, you said your youth career started at Spurs. How did you get to Orient from Spurs?
Well, I was at Spurs until it was the cut-off point, wherever you got, it was an old YTSN apprenticeship, it's Scholars Now or whatever they call it, and didn't make the cut, but I had interest from Watford and a couple of other teams. Watford, Kenny Jackett was a youth team manager at the time, and he really sort of met my mum and dad, really wanted me to go and sign for Watford, and they were a division or two above. And I was really close to signing there, but Pat Holland, who was at Tottenham at the time, he said, look, before you make any decisions, go down and speak to the guys at Orient. At the time, my best mate was Darren Purse. We grew up together. He was there. I knew a couple of other players who were playing in the academy or in the sort of schoolboys. So I thought, I'll go over there. And do you know what? It was great playing with your mates who you've played with a long time. It was nice and local. Okay, it was a drop down. And I remember I was at a party and Warren Barton was there. I don't know if he was at Wimbledon or Newcastle at the time. And I was speaking to him and I said, look, I've got these two offers. I don't know what to do, whether go to Orient down in League One or go to Watford in a higher division. And he said to me, what do you want to achieve? So, well, I want to play first team football. And I was probably 15, 16 at the time. And he said to me, if you want to get in the first team as quickly as you can, go to Leyton Orient. And I was like, right, okay. As a kid who just, it wasn't about money, especially at Orient, it's never about money, but you want to play first-team football. So I listened to that and I thought, coupled with the fact it's on the doorstep, I didn't have to move away from home Stan Diggs, got friends there, and I signed for Orient. And he was right, because I was in the first team at 17. But then when I stepped back and I left Orient, I thought, well, we'd obviously got relegated that season, so where do you go? You normally drop down. And you're thinking, well, if it wouldn't have worked out at Watford, I could have dropped down to the division below. So it's one of them things you can always look back on life. But that was the reason I signed for Orient.
But as a young player, it seems like you had a real, you had trust in your own ability to go out there and want to play first team football. I think that's so nice to see, and I think sometimes we miss that where players do go to the higher leagues. Even today's society, they go on and think, I'm going for the, unfortunately, the money and the kudos of playing for a championship or a premiership side under 23s, and then you see them, and it's no disrespect, tumbling back down and then finding their natural feet in League Two or the National League. And we've seen it with JMD. You know, he wrote a great piece in, I think, was the Evening Standard, one of the London papers, talking about his time at Brighton, why he left Brighton to go on his little journey in lower league football, and starting to see now him slowly become more comfortable with his own ability. Some of the stuff he does on the pitch now is phenomenal. And we talked about decision making earlier. I think he's still got a little bit of those little things to learn, whether he passes or shoots, the simple things. But reality is, he's managed to get a regular first team football, and probably will continue to get regular first team football, and not just the Orient, or even as he goes back up the pyramid to get to a higher league.
I think that one of the biggest things, what you said, is a lot of kids these days see the fame, how many Instagram followers they can get, how much money they can earn. For me back then, it was about money. I took a pay cut to go to Leyton Orient because I used to sell the Evening Standard after school at Liverpool Street Station. Every night after school, get a number 8 bus, bomb up there, sell it. I used to get like £6 a day. And then on Friday, Saturday and Sunday evenings, I used to work in local pub, the Jeremiah Bullfrog in Bethnal Green, collecting glasses. And I used to earn £25 a night. So I was on over £100 a week at sort of 14 years old. I went to Orient and I was on £26.50. So I had to take a pay cut to go and play football. But that's all I ever wanted to do. And then when I signed my first pro contract, I think I was on £150 a week, but with £150 appearance money. So when you play 2 games a week, it was quite nice, actually, at 17 years old.
So in terms of that development as a youth teamer, I know that it's different now in the way that they're treated. You're not cleaning boots, you're not, you know, cleaning up after the senior pros. But the transition from youth into senior football, when you had it, like you said, that debut against Crewe, is that essentially still the same now? So a youth teamer coming through at Leyton Orient, stepping up into the pro game, would that transition still be the same?
Yes and no, because they play under 23s football now. We used to have the old Combination League, which was a reserve team league. So you would have all the, whoever was injured from like big clubs, they would have people like Paul Davies, who used to be at Arsenal. I remember playing against him in the reserves. I'm sort of 17 years old, playing against an experienced player like that. And you would have injured players in there, guys trying to break through. And the step up from playing under 18 football, which was the youth team days, it was 16 to 18, to playing with men, because you're playing against men 28, 30 years old, you go up and the physical side is unbelievable. The difference when you train from 2 days a week from being a kid going full-time, that's a big step up as well. But when you go in to play against men, I remember Colin West in training, I used to try and mark him, and all he would do is, I can't swear on it, but he used to say a few words if I'd won the ball, and the next time I got the ball, he'd let me know he was there, let's say, with a nice sharp elbow. So you grew up quickly, you had to. Yeah, it was like survival of the fittest.
Best way, I think.
And you're one of the many players who've trodden that well-trodden path from Spurs to Orient, with the signings of Marsh and Keziah Sterling. Ross has hinted that there might be a blossoming relationship there. How important do you think that is for a club like Orient to have that relationship?
It's massive, absolutely massive for both clubs. It's big for Tottenham, because we've seen it over the years with Andros Townsend and Harry Kane coming down that way, getting regular football, playing against men, as we just said. Sort of finding their feet. Okay, it's a different style of football, but it's still part of growing up and learning your trade. But it's also why you've got them there. They will hopefully give you additional points so you can move up the league or get to where you want to be. So it's a really important thing. And I think with West Ham around the corner, okay, relations are not brilliant with them, but the club needs to tap into the ones closer around to them to get these loan players in because they are of a good quality.
I think for me, I think the relationship with Spurs, I think that's been improved upon because the relationship with Martin Ling and with Ross as well, both worked there. I think that's really good. I think, and also the connection with the youth team set up there as well, that's really cool. But going back to sort of nowadays, and we're talking about players feeling the pressure, when, and you can probably think of times, but when the team's underperforming, it's not doing what it should do, how does that sort of disseminate down to the players? How do you feel on a Saturday or Tuesday evening before you run out there when you know you haven't had a good run of games, you're not scoring, or you're leaking goals? How does that get in your head?
I think when you're in a team and your confidence is low, what you start doing is you have a look at your teammates. Not in a nasty way, and you have a look at your squad, you have a look at your teammates, and you're thinking, are we creating any chances to score? Because if we're not, you get that in your head, but we're never going to score a goal here. We're not even looking like creating anything. So then that's a real bad thing, bad place to be in, because you think we can hold out and we can probably try and nick a 0-0 at best here, but we don't look like scoring. But if you're creating chances and you're missing them, you've got that bit of hope. Right, okay, let's keep doing that. Let's try to do the right things. Losing is horrible, but you just need that little bit of luck to change. It could be a goal, it could be a missed penalty from the other team. Just that little bit of luck, and you get that win or a draw or whatever you need, and it changes so quickly. Well, you can see now with the O's, from where they were 5-6 just before Christmas, when they was on a bit of a bad run, they wasn't playing very well, to now, different type of football, slightly different system. Okay, we've got different players in, but I think now with the team they've got and the new signings, I think this is more a Ross sort of team. This is the idea he wants with players in certain positions and types of players in certain positions. This is when he can really get judged or be judged once he's got these players in and looking forward. Because I know a lot of supporters are probably still unhappy with his appointment, and they was previously with the way they were playing. But now he can start to be judged, I believe.
How much do the players talk away from training, away from the ground? I know nowadays you've got WhatsApp groups and all sorts, so communication is a lot easier. When you were a player, to be fair, would you get home from a game and maybe get on the landline and speak to one of your teammates about the game itself?
We, after training every day, every single day, I used to go with Darren Purse, who was my mate. He used to drive, I didn't at the time, so he used to take me to training and back. We used to, on the way back, go to Percy Ingalls, grab a sandwich, go to the snooker hall in Broadway Market, and we'd play 5 games of snooker, have a chat about training or whatever, and just have a general chat, and then go home. And we'd do that every single day when there wasn't a game. You'd see other players, they would go out, the older ones with the old Tuesday club or Wednesday club, whatever they want, they'd go out for a few beers, and they would talk about that before they couldn't talk. There was lots of different things, but today's players, like you say, with WhatsApp and everything else, I think that could be a bit more detrimental, because all it needs is one player, an experienced player, to be dropped or whatever, and he could, you don't know what he's putting in that WhatsApp group. You really don't know, and it could start getting into the players' heads, or there could be somebody in that WhatsApp group who's taking your place in the team, and you don't know how it's going to be.
It's tough, isn't it?
I was mesmerised, because I can think of situations even this season where Ross came in and dropped Dino, and he dropped Coulson. And that some of the younger players in that squad, yes, you got probably two or three in there, centre halves are doing a good job. We mentioned Marv earlier and Danny Happ, and they're looking, thinking, right, we got a chance, but they got a chance, but then they look over the shoulder and going, but I look up to this fella, so why has he been dropped? You know, and to say that could be a negative as much as a positive. A player going, yeah, I've got the chance to now prove myself, but I'm missing my right arm, the guy I look up to, my inspiration, etc., etc. So there could be some negatives there as well.
Yeah, it's not really a negative. If you've taken a senior pro's place in the team, he's obviously done something wrong, or you're better than him. That's the only two things it comes down to. So you'll look at that and you'll say, right, I've got his shirt, I'm going to play. I know my job. I get coached all week by good coaches. I've got a good manager who's telling me and giving me the right information. As long as I do my job, against my opposite number, that's all I need to worry about. Okay, positional sense and stuff like that. In games, you've got the goalkeeper or someone next to you helping you along with positions. But as you've, if you've played 20, 30 games like last year, Dan Happy and Marvin, they've played them games. Marvin at the beginning of the season when he was in and then he was out, he's learning his trade and he was getting caught out of position, but he's taken sort of advice from other people, coaches, and he's, as of Saturday, he didn't put a foot wrong.
Fascinating stuff, isn't it, gents? That's XO's defender Glenn Wilkie there. This is the Leighton Orient Fan Show. We've got plenty more coming up.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
It's the Leighton Orient Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from the Lowdown podcast. Julian Firm, Brendan Pitcher, XO's defender Glenn Wilkie is joining us too. But Jules, you've been to Iceland.
Yeah, and post last week's radio show, we were talking with Danny Mack and he was talking about sustainability, the fans across the globe. And I sort of asked him outside, what do you mean by fans across the globe? There's a few people who are in Leytonstone supporters as much as Leighton. And he reached out and said, we've got fans in Iceland. I went, okay, all jokes aside, put me in touch with our Iceland, because I'm going there on holiday. Put me in touch with the forum. And he did. And I had the pleasure on Saturday morning in a hotel reception having an interview with a guy who heads up our the Leighton Orient supporters group, which of there is 100 Leighton Orient supporters in little old Iceland.
Who would have thought it? The Iceland branch of Leighton Orient. And why Leighton Orient? Of course, you asked them.
Well, I own a travel agency and we bring Icelanders to watch English football. I've been doing this for like 20 years.
Okay.
And Icelanders really love English football. And I was always going to the big matches, like Arsenal, Liverpool or something like that. But I got a little bit tired of it. I really want to see real football. And one of my partners in London, called Martin, he was a Leighton Orient fan. And he said, come on over to Brisbane Road and I'll show you some real football. And that was like 15, 16 years ago or something like that. And since then, I've just been in love with Leighton Orient because I love the atmosphere and it's like family. It's something you can't get at the Premier clubs. And I really, really love the atmosphere.
Well, that's a good point, because when we look at the Premiership, the Championship and also some of the foreign leagues, we find that Orient has that. They're not just the individual, i.e. there's other clubs very similar, but I think it is very family. The opportunity even today to have this conversation,
exactly,
is like being a part of a family.
Yeah.
So from afar, say 15 odd years, you've seen the club through some highs and some lows, like we have, you know. How do you experience that when you're so remote and when the chips were down a couple of years ago under the old regime and also now the positiveness out as under the new leadership? How do you cope with that?
Well, it's been difficult to watch, at least the club go down. But in the last few years since Nigel Travis and they got on board, it's been much better. But it's been a difficult years. But I just love the club because they are always fighting. The fans are trying to get people to know we want that, we want that, and stuff like that.
I think going back to what you said there, when we got relegated,
yeah.
I've been an Orient fan for too many years. And that time, first time, I felt one of a big group. I think we all wanted the same thing, you know. We wanted the previous regime out,
yeah,
but exactly. We all stood shoulder to shoulder, and that was quite emotional. And probably doing that from afar as well, which has been a bit challenging, but still, you're a part of that family.
Yeah.
So, that was a lady with a cleaning trolley just gone by. We said hello. Where we are now, you know, we had an amazing season under Justin, and the sadness that brought when Justin passed away.
Yeah.
And then I think we've had a very undulating season thus far, you know, with Ross starting off, followed by Cole and Ross back in, and now permanent manager or permanent head coach. What's your thoughts, really? Any opinions on that so far?
Well, because of this tragedy in the summer when Justin died, I think the club has not recovered after that tragic. And I think we just have to be patient. This season, I just want us to stay in the league. I'm not asking for anything else because I think it will take time to get back on track. And hopefully that will happen next season. But this season, I'm just thinking, stay in the league and we'll build up a good club with this great management, which is at Leyton Orient right now.
So you're saying that with Ross, and I think that's probably an opinion shared by many. I think for myself, I think early in the part of the year when, before Justin passed away, I think the end of last season, we was very like, we're going to go through this league as well. And yep, I think under Justin's guidance, we probably would have done because he just had the club, the whole club ticking.
Yep.
And I think you're quite right. I think it's hit everybody. And we've mentioned a number of times on the show where I've never had the pleasure of meeting Justin and never will. But we all grieve, you know, and we've all grieved very heavily.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably been the same from our fans across the world as well, because we are that family. And when you get someone close to you pass away, it is so, so tough. So let's get on to slightly different terms. We've got Stevenage Borough today away. Yeah. So if you look on the location in the UK, they're probably one of our local rivals. Yeah?
Exactly.
We've bought in some new good players. You know, we've got a new goalkeeper, which is great, although Sam Sargent hasn't been doing too badly. We've brought in another striker, which I think is obvious for most of the fans to see. We can't score enough, although I feel we've had some good strikers with Leanne Goal and Connor Wilkinson, two good forwards we brought in the summer. Matty Harrell still contributing, and we've got Raul Sartorio, the young guy who's
I really like him.
Hot property,
yeah,
I think.
Exactly.
Very good. And then we've got Cisse in midfield. I think he was the commanding midfielder we've been looking for 2 years. Yeah. Yeah. If ever watched the pleasure online, watching him play or come live to Orient, he does control that midfield. He is a leader, and that's all the things that we struggle with. So, score predictions for today from so far away. What your thoughts on the game? The score prediction, and also from what the next. So 5 or 6 games is going to hold out for Orient?
I think we're going to win today. I think the team is getting, well, they're getting stronger. At least I was at the Grimsby game, and they played very well, especially in the second half of that game.
And that's where we drew at home 1-1.
Yeah, exactly. It was a penalty in the last minute, thank God.
Yeah, but you're right, but the second half we were a lot better.
It was a lot better, and I saw some good movement, and I see prospect in the team. That I think they are getting better and better. Ross is getting better in his part of the team. So I really think they're going to win today. It was 2-1. I'm pretty sure that in the next few games, we struggle. It's strange, but we seem to struggle at home. We are sometimes better away. But I really hope that our home, Brisbane Road, will be a force in the coming games, that we can get some points at home, winning.
Winning, he says. So that was a gent from the Icelandic supporters branch of Leyton Orient. That was very interesting, Julian.
Yes, it's different, you know. And this is what it means about Orient. And we're a family. We got a family in here tonight. We've got an ex-pro who's very, very avid sort of fan as well. We've got us two mad people here. And then we've got the 4,000 season ticket holders at the ground. But there's people in sort of all four corners of this globe, you know, who are Orient fans, and long may that continue.
Did you realise that when you were a player? I suppose it wasn't as forthcoming as it is now, that sort of global attraction.
No, you didn't really hear about it. There was no way of hearing about it, you know. We still only had 5 channels on the TV. So you didn't hear about anything, did you?
He thought someone from International was someone from Chingford supporting the club, wasn't it?
That is Glenn Wilkie there. This is the Leyton Orient Fans Show. We've got a big bumper 4th section coming up for you. More questions to Glenn, more questions about Leyton Orient, and looking ahead, of course, to the game against Macclesfield at the weekend.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
It's the Leyton Orient Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, the boys from the Lowdown podcast, and Glenn Wilkie, Exo's defender, is in the house with us. All the questions we are asking you, Glenn, and we've just established, by the way, during the ads, that Saturday the 6th of May 1995, a scorching hot day at Brisbane Road, I was there, and you were there for your final game.
It was my final game for Leighton Orient that day, yeah, against Wickham on the Hallow Turf.
Incredible scenes.
Yeah, you got a lucky win that day. Was it Cyril Regis who scored the winner?
It 1-0? Was Cyril Regis. You know what was poignant about that? It was his last game at Wickham. He knew he was going to leave and he needed one more to get into double figures for the campaign.
Right, okay. Yeah, no, he done well, actually. Well, I don't think he'd done too much that day because he was getting on a bit, but he'd suffered
an injury about two-thirds of the way into the season and then he came back and was just not the same player because Wickham had him and Simon Garner up front that season.
Right, okay. Yeah. Did you have Guppy at that time? Or?
Gups had left. He was at Newcastle. He'd gone the season before or that summer to Newcastle.
Right, yeah. Yeah, fairly good team that year. I think you was up there, weren't you? Just missed out on the playoffs.
They just missed out, yeah, by one spot. Yeah, Martin O'Neill in charge. Good times. But yeah, final day of the season at Leighton Orient. Good times that was. And Cyril. Top bloke.
Yeah, no, very good. He about a week or two later, I went on my coaching badges. I started coaching very young and went to do my next level coaching badges. And Cyril was actually on the course with me for the week. And he was a bit of ribbing about him scoring a winning goal and whatnot. So as it comes to the end of the week, for those who have not been on coaching courses, you get given a topic of what you need to coach for your final session. And I got given attacking headers. So you pick out of the group how many players you want to set up this session. So I'll pick Cyril. So we set up this session, the ball came in, Cyril, bang, header, bottom corner. Came over again, bang, header, bottom corner. Done it about four times. So the assessor's looking at me and I'm thinking, I ain't going to pass anything here. So I walked over to Cyril and I just went in his ear, can you miss one, please? I need to coach you. He went, yeah, no problem. So next one comes over and he just balloons it over the bar. So there's me coaching the legend, Cyril Regis, how to score a header. And luckily, the next bar said, Cyril, you need to head it back the way it's come, about bottom corner. Ball came in, headed it straight where I wanted to. Well done. Pat him on the back. Go on, you can go. And I passed.
As easy as that. There we go, gents.
You're talking about a scorching hot day there. So my thoughts about that is... what temperature do you need to roast a nice bit of beef for?
Depends how you want it.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to throw that in somewhere. Sorry, Glenn. Not to apologize.
So this is a TV... You made a TV appearance not so long ago, Glenn.
Well, it was about 8 years ago now.
Oh.
Yeah. But we just moved into a new house and I'd applied for Come Dine With Me. And my wife just, why are you doing this? Don't want people in. We've just moved in the house. We've got no curtains up. We've not decorated. I said, I don't care about it. I just... That competitive spirit in me. She said, why do you want to do it? Is it for the money of winning it? I said, no, I just want to win something. I've been out of the game so long now. I just want to wind people up because I'm quite good at that. And if you look at my Twitter, I do it all the time. I'm good at winding people up. I can cook and I want to win. And luckily I did. Did all three.
Amazing. So they voted you the winner?
Yes. Yeah.
Any rows?
Yeah, I made one lady cry at my table. She walked out crying.
Oh, wow.
There was another...
You weren't telling the Cyril Regis story again, were you?
No. Yeah. She was dressed as Ali G, and I said, you'll have to watch it. So I made her cry, and then there was another lady on there who was playing tactically, who I caught eating a tuna sandwich out of her handbag. Long story. And then I just thought, well, competitive spirit. We walk in there first day, five people in the house. Cameras have gone to set up in the kitchen. I say to them, right, let's have a great week. Let's split the money five ways now, £200 each. Two of them said yes, two of them said no. So straight away, the two said no, you've got to keep your eye on them. She was one of them. So kept my eye on her and just played the game. I was a right horrible git as well.
Football, coach, cook. It's the no end to Glenn Wilkie's talents. Let's get back to the football, I suppose. And Julian, we're interested in one thing here, and that is the difference. We've spoken a lot about football then and football now, but Leighton Orient then, Glenn, and Leighton Orient now, how much of a difference do you see in the two clubs?
Massive difference. Obviously, I'm not around the club day to day, so I don't know what the players have got, sort of, with facility-wise and everything else. But I can only speak about my time when I was there, where it's well documented the club for a Fiverr documentary with John Sitton and that. I was there at that era. So we used to get sandwich and soup at the training ground down at the Douglas Air in Walthamstow. Then we had to change training grounds probably because we didn't pay the bill. And then we had to change. You'd walk into the ground every day not knowing where you were going to train. And in the end, we had the kit man who was also doing the lunch. And he'd have a big tin of beans, not even the Heinz beans, like the cheap Tesco Blue Stripe beans. and light bread, and you'd come in and you'd have beans on toast. It was awful. So you went through when the club was skint, basically. They were losing 10 grand a week back then, and that's 25 years ago, which is a lot of money. So from that sort of thing, it wasn't good. But football's changed in general, obviously corporate and everything else. Obviously with the new stands, which have come in since I've left, the great work Danny Macklin's doing behind the scenes, and the owners, and everything about it, you can see it's a million miles away from where it was when I left.
I think for me, I think you look at the fan base, you know, and people want to, and I think Danny was mentioning it last week, you want to have that match day experience. But still, we've got to remember we're a family, Leyton Orient, East End club. So we have to keep that elements as well. I think that they're still being, those true values are being held. What was it like to sort of play under John Sitton?
John was the best guy. All right. I didn't have a great long career, but I played football. I quit when I was 25, just had enough of injuries. And my wife said to me, "Can you get a real job?"
So, which
was,
that now?
Yeah, that was lovely. But John was the best coach I've ever worked under. His attention to detail, and he was so paranoid as a coach, because he was a centre half, and I played in defence most of my time. Over, I played in midfield for Orient, but as a defender, he made you paranoid. When the ball was at the other end, you'd be always watching what could happen, what can go wrong back here, you know, or what's this, what's that, and he got that into your head. That you can't rest for 1 minute, no matter if the ball's coming near you or it's far away from you, you've got to be alert. And he was absolutely brilliant at that. And not only that, with the other players, technically he was quality. Obviously, we know what happened, man management skills, that's another thing. But speaking to Darren Purse, who went on and had a great career, and he worked under a lot of good managers, Trevor Francis, people like that, Birmingham, Cardiff, he still says that he was the best coach he worked for.
And touching on the Club for a Fiver documentary, it's gone down quite infamously in football history as one of the strangest documentaries. Did you know at the time, would you think, oh, this is going to be a disaster? Or was it a case of watching it back and going, oh, yeah, this does look bad?
The thing was, the cameras were with us from pre-season, from day one. And for the first week or two, you'd notice them. And then after that, you wouldn't really notice them. You just forget. They just blended into the scene and you got on with it. And the thing was that you don't know the story, what's going to come out, because they've got thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of footage. So how are they going to make a story? What are they going to make the story? And the story was John Sitton, unfortunately. Obviously, with these half-time team talks or rants or whatever you want to call them, they highlighted them, the one at Brentford away, the one against Blackpool at home. Both times I was in the changing room. They highlighted that, and he was a fall guy. And it was such a shame because he never got another job in football after that. Which is a real shame, because me saying he's the best coach who's I've ever worked with, Darren Purse saying that, others have said that as well. When he used to do a lot of work for the FA, he used to coach for the FA, the coaches and stuff like that. He's so knowledgeable with his football. It's a shame what happened to him. But with regards to the documentary, the first time we got to see it was when it was on Channel 4 that evening, coming out, we're all sitting there and you go, wow, what is this all about?
You can see why John didn't ask... I'll ask Glenn to sort of bring you dinner, because he'll have probably been there.
I knew you were going to come out with it. I was waiting
two crackers
for it.
One evening. But I think you're right. I think the people who don't know John, don't know the behind the scenes, think he's a bit odd, a bit peculiar. But reality is, I think you talk to other people who go, it was a bit crackers, but he knew his stuff. And I think that's such a shame for any coach, doesn't matter if John Sitton or anyone else, who really believes in football. And he must have hit him hard over his career today. I know he does well now, driving a cab, and has done for a number of years. But it's a shame those sort of people can't give back, because he'll probably give back tomorrow if he had the opportunity, wouldn't he?
Yeah, definitely. He's I'll keep in touch with him every now and again. Still a nice guy, obviously. Like you say, he's a cab driver now, but he's... It's football's loss that he's not in the game. It really is. Really is.
In terms of his management style and a general management style, is there, in your opinion, as a player, is there a blanket approach to being a manager? Because it's so difficult, because players are different, right? You talked about man management there, and that was perhaps where he failed. Whereas Ross, I suppose his man management is actually on point. Have you got to have everything right, or is that almost impossible for a manager to be able to have all these different factors?
You'd like to have every single angle covered. You really want to, and not many do. And that's why they have a big backroom staff and coaching team, so they can help. But the better ones are they all say, oh, he's a great man manager. Well, Mourinho, the first time around at Chelsea, he was almost like their friend, put the arm around them, but they knew where the line was. They didn't take advantage of it. I remember when from John Sitton to Pat Olin came in, and he had Cunningham, who came in, I forget his first name. Tommy Cunningham.
Tommy Cunningham,
as assistant manager, and the first training week afterwards, it was like a holiday camp. It was so laughing and joking, do what you want, but they're saying things, and players just relaxed so much, but in a negative way. They went from one extreme to the other. It was just ridiculous.
So we're talking about consistency earlier in the season, and is that important for a player to have the consistency and approach by the manager to literally know where you are with that manager? Because you're talking about that situation there where it's gone from one extreme to the other. That's one thing often we found as fans that the consistency this season with Ross, then Fletcher, back to Ross, is he interim, is he permanent, is there someone else going to come in? Does that has an effect on the players and how they self motivate themselves for the games?
It shouldn't, because you should be self motivated at all times, but we know people and humans in any line of work are not. I think the ones who are out of contract at the end of the season, I think it would have probably affected them more, because they need to prove that they're worth to the manager to try and get a new contract. So, and because these guys at this level, they're not earning the money the top guys do. They need a job to pay their bills. So with regards to that, not knowing who the manager was would have a big effect mentally for you. With the guys who have come in, or interim manager and that, I think the best thing the club did was made Ross full-time manager. I think they should have done it probably before Christmas, but I understand there was contracts, bits and pieces going on that they had to sort out first, because they probably missed about three games there where it would have had a good effect, where they could have got more extra points, or it would have settled down a bit quicker. But they've got there in the end, and the O's won't be in trouble this season, because he's a bloody good coach, Ross. I've known him for many years. He's a very good coach. He's finding his way as a manager. He's getting the players in the right areas, i.e. with the players he's brought in the transfer window. And basically, this is his first transfer window, so you can judge him on this a bit and going forward. And then with another transfer window in the summer, then he'll start getting moulding that team into a really, really, really strong team, hard to beat team, but will play good football and will win a lot of games.
It is 12 points clear of safety now, like you say, 15 games to go this season. Do you just foresee consolidation now, Glenn, from now until the end of the campaign?
Yes. I think if you spoke to most of the supporters before Saturday's game, they were really, really nervous in case they lost at Stevenage, because then the gap would have been 6 points. After the game, obviously, the gap's not as tight. Now people were thinking, right, okay, we ain't going to get relegated here. Let's get a real good push on and get up the league, which I think with the players, barring any injuries that come in key areas to players, I think they will. I think they'll push up. I had a little look at the fixtures. I think they'll get a minimum of 16 points from them last 15 games, and that's a minimum. You never know. If they go on a run and they start winning a lot more, and they're playing teams directly above them, so you never know where you can get up and how other results go. And you could find yourself not far off the playoffs, and it could be a push to get there. I don't think it will happen this year, but it's not impossible.
It's a similar situation to that the first season under Justin Edinburgh in the conference, where kind of we got out of that relegation trouble pretty quickly and then just established ourselves, built a settled side, and we all know what happened the season after that.
Indeed. Okay, gents, it's been nothing but a pleasure having you all on. Before we go, quick score prediction this weekend, Julian. How do you see this one going against Macclesfield?
I think this could be a difficult one. They're fighting for survival in lots of areas, aren't they? And I know that the problem's been well publicised, what's going on at the club. I think we're a bit of a roll, and that's the bit I want to sort of take away. I think we'll overturn the deficit we had at their place, and we looked at different size Saturday versus when we was up at Macclesfield. I think we'll probably get a 2-0 home win.
Yeah, I'll go 2-0. Macclesfield haven't won away since October, so should be fairly comfortable.
The knowledge.
I'm going 4 home goals. It would be nice to keep a clean sheet, and I know Trent loves a clean sheet because he tweets about it all the time. Did I say Trent?
Yeah,
Kent. Trent Kent. Yeah. I'm getting both his names mixed up. Kent, he loves a clean sheet. So I would like a 4-0, but I can see a 4-1.
Oh, nice.
That's
okay.
A nice score.
We've got one more for you, Glenn, before we go. You've got about 30 seconds to give me your Legends five-a-side team.
What,
for Leyton Orient? Yeah. Players that you either play with or, I suppose, anyone else that's played for the club.
I would have Ian Bogey in there, straight away.
Top player.
Danny Carter.
Oh, you're going for good players here, aren't you?
Well, I'm going on the ones I've played with.
Sideways Bogey.
He's the best player I've ever seen.
Really?
Ever seen in training. He was
great
Paul,
talent.
Like Paul Gascoigne. I'd like, at the current crop, I'd like Brophy in there.
Yeah.
I'd have George Marsh because he's tenacious. And then goalkeeper. You wouldn't need a goalkeeper because the other team wouldn't get a ball. So that would leave it at the four.
No, oh, nice. No goalkeeper. Wonderful stuff. That was also from Gwilf. So thank you very much for sending that message in, buddy. Gents, like I say, Glenn, thank you very much for coming in this evening. It's
Cheers,
been great. We'll be back with the Leyton Orient Fan Show next Monday at 9 p.m. Love Sport London. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.